Hello, everybody. How you doing? Hope all is well. Today, we're talking about our first antidote, among others that we'll discuss, to work on not being such a perfectionist. So today's brief episode, we're going to touch on a few things. We're going to touch on one song lyric that I really like. Of course, we're going to work with Dr. Elia Cohen's book, The New Rational Therapy. For this section, he's talking a lot about William James, famous American philosopher. I think he'll offer some great stuff there, some of his own elaborations. I think it'll be really interesting. Then also, the third connection we'll make is to Pema Chodron's, the Pocket Pema Chodron. So this is a great conversation, I think. Hopefully, it'll be useful for you. And let's start off with that song lyric. So this is coming from Mac Miller's last album, the song Perfecto. And for me, this is a song that I really like a lot. I'm a fan of his. It's obviously very unfortunate that he passed away. And I think this song is, along with other songs in the album too, like when you watch a video for Self-Care, I mean, he's making some very clear references to Stoicism, right? Memento Mori. I mean, I think this whole album has got a lot of philosophy to it. That being said, I think this one lyric really stands out for me in terms of working to be less of a perfectionist. So here it is. It's in the chorus. Well, it ain't perfect, but I don't mind, because it's worth it. So right off the bat, I think the word well to me is a great way to start that line. Because to me, well implies like I'm accepting this thing. I'm not going to get, let's say, overly emotional about it. It's just, it is what it is, right? It ain't perfect. Cool. That's life. That's ourselves. That's other people, situations, what have you, right? But I don't mind. Once again, that powerful notion of acceptance. I noticed it, but I'm not going to ruminate over it. I'm not going to think too much. I'm not going to overthink about this perfection. I'm not going to focus on it because it's worth it, right? So this idea of because it's worth it, I think will resonate really nicely with our other thinkers for today. The idea that a perfect universe, a perfect self, a perfect relationship, a perfect job, not only won't exist, but we don't want those things. And that sounds weird, right? Like I think James and Pema Chodron really highlight these points super nicely, right? A perfect world is not something we should even want. It's boring. If the world was perfect, there wouldn't be much to do, right? If we all want to be people who I think are optimistic and energetic and striving towards goodness, I mean, we need to do those things to be happy. A great argument is made for the fact that it's not the results in life that make us happy, but it's the process. And that's kind of a cliche, but ultimately, I think there's a lot of evidence to support that, right? And again, even the word happiness, we can question, right? And I'm sorry for saying the word again. I forget that sometimes I'm recording a podcast, like I teach, right? So I've said this already with students. I've said this semester already, and I've said this with clients recently too. So I'm sorry for saying the word again. It's a weird thing to do, but it's a habit. So ultimately, let's replace happiness with eudaimonia. It's a larger word from the ancient Greek, right? It sort of refers more to cultivating a life where we're pursuing meaning. We're pursuing a sense of fulfillment. We're pursuing an image of ourselves. We're making sure that we're doing things that leave the world a better place as a result of our presence. So it's bigger, right? It makes space for pain and suffering and happiness and, of course, joy as well, right? But to say that you want to lead a life that's fulfilling versus saying I want to have a happy life, well, let's go for the fulfilling thing because it's more realistic, right? So in the face of an imperfect universe, we can accept that, right? Well, it ain't perfect. Okay. I'm not going to focus on that. Things being worth it, that's eudaimonia. Eudaimonia is saying, right, this is imperfect. This is painful, but it's worth it. So let's talk about this, right? So why should we not even want the world to be perfect? I think William James makes a really great argument here, right? First, he's like, well, we have to come to grips with the idea that, and this is for William James, we could disagree, a lot of great arguments on both sides of this idea, right? He thinks we have free will because practically we need to at least think we do. Why? Because as he says, quote, this is, you know, Cohen highlighting this, is a great point, right? The doctrine of having free will holds up improvement as at least possible. Whereas determinism, everything's predetermined, everything's already, you know, kind of set out for us, right? We're sort of just living this preconceived notion of who we are, what will happen to us, assures us that our whole notion of possibility is born of human ignorance. and that necessity and impossibility between them rule the destinies of the world. So if necessity rules our destiny, right? And again, it's not us. We can't even improve things, right? And then Cohen elaborates on this point nicely. In a wholly deterministic universe, and the key word there is wholly, right? W-H-O-L-L-Y. And I think that's really important because it opens up spaces for those of us who perhaps might believe in a higher power that has a will that that can exert itself on the world. We could think about a co-creator approach, right? So co-creating the world means we have free will, higher power has a will, other people have will, free wills, right? So it's a little more complex, let's say, or adds complexity to a world where there is no higher power and it's just us acting. Because obviously if it's us and the higher power, that adds complexity, another element. And also on the other side, right, adds complexity to a world where no human has any free will. Right. So I think the co-creator, as it's almost naturally implied in the name, right, to a degree is more balanced. So I think when Cohen is using the word holy, he's trying to encourage us to consider the notion that, there might be a co-creator approach. Again, this is my interpretation of him. Right. There is also no point in talking about what should be, since such talk assumes that there are genuine possibilities in the universe which determinism forecloses. Right? So if everything is determined, we're not even really able to authentically talk about what could be, because who cares? It doesn't matter. Our actions and our perceptions ultimately don't mean anything, right? So he wants to establish that for James. And again, I'm not sure if Cohen necessarily agrees. He might be, as I am, just interpreting James here. So let's say for James, we have some free will. And that matters, because that obviously would affect how we view things, how we think and feel, and how we act, right? So the next quote, I think, highlights more about how it applies to how we should think about not making the absurd demand for perfection, right? He says, quote, "Freedom in a world already perfect could only mean freedom to be worse. And who could be so insane as to wish that?" So if the world's perfect and we have free will, we'll only make it worse. So he establishes that we have free will, right? Or at least the notion of free will is helpful to us in some way. And then he says, well, okay, we need to think about that. Additionally, we now, with this freedom, have to confront the notion that things are imperfect. And that's a good thing. Because we would mess it up. Our freedom would only mean freedom to be worse. Okay, it would close off possibility if things were perfect. Surely, he says, the only possibility that one can rationally claim is the possibility that things may be better. So once we stop demanding that the universe should be perfect, and by universe, let's interpret that as universe, and also let's even say other people and relationships, right? So this is obviously, this anecdote is a little bit more about our perceptions of the world than about our perceptions of ourselves, although I think this will extend to that really nicely as well too, to an extent, right? We have to work then to make it worth it. So we drop the demand, that's absurd, right, for perfection, which is sort of like Mac Miller saying, well, it ain't perfect, right? And then we try to strive to make this life worth it in the face of that by making it better. So by better, of course, we don't mean by making it perfect. We mean by making it better. And that's seems like it doesn't even warrant mentioning, but I think it does, right? So the question, you know, might be, how can I improve this instead of why is this so messed up? And that, I think, is actually a pretty powerful distinction, right? And then I think Cohen provides really nice elaboration here too. If the world were perfect, you might as well give up on the idea of freedom altogether. Since what then would it mean but the opportunity to do worse. If the world, right, falls short of your dreams, hopes, goals, or expectations, which it will, okay, the tool is not to overthink that, or the approach is not, the antidote, of course, is not to overthink that. It's, once again, as we said, to accept it and then move towards improvement. Okay, in a perfect universe, Cohen says, you are not afforded any opportunity for growth or change. And I want to run with that point a little bit, and I think it's a really powerful note, and quickly quote the Pema Chodron section, right? She tells us in her book, The Pocket Pema Chodron, perfection is like death. Even that's a good mantra. Write that down. That's a very good idea to write as a mantra, right? If you're someone who really, like, you just are constantly tortured by the things not going your way, or you have really, let's say, unrealistic expectations, and you're like, you know what, I'm just putting too much pressure on this, I'm putting too much pressure on me, that's a great mantra to hit yourself with, I think. Here we go. Ready? She says, we think that if we just meditated enough or jogged or ate perfect food, everything would be perfect. But from the point of view of someone who is awake, that's death. Seeking security or perfection, rejoicing in feeling confirmed and whole, self-contained and comfortable, is some kind of death. It doesn't have any fresh air. There's no room for something to come in and interrupt all that. Or, you know, in James's opinion too, there's no room for doing anything that would make us improve, which is a hugely meaningful and valuable and rewarding part of life. We are killing the moment by controlling our experience. Doing this is setting ourselves up for failure, because sooner or later, we're going to have an experience we can't control. Our house is going to burn down. Someone we love is going to die. We're going to find out we have cancer, or somebody's going to spill a tomato juice all over our white suit. The essence of life is that it's challenging. Sometimes it is sweet and sometimes it is bitter, right? Also adding to this a little bit, the essence of life is that it is imperfect. We said that already, right? It's a staple of existence. Sometimes your body tenses and sometimes it relaxes or opens. Sometimes you have a headache and sometimes you feel 100% healthy. From an awakened perspective, trying to tie up all the loose ends and finally get it together is death, because it involves rejecting a lot of your basic experience. There is something aggressive about that approach to life, trying to flatten out all the rough spots and imperfections into a nice smooth ride. To be fully alive, fully human, and completely awake is to be continually thrown out of the nest. To live fully is to be always in no man's land, to experience each moment as completely new and fresh. So, I mean, I think these ideas really line up nicely. Right. Another point I want to raise, this is from a little bit of studying I've done about Leonardo da Vinci, right? This is from Michael Gelb's work, Think Like Da Vinci. It's a great book that kind of pertains to this. When you're creative, you're trying to make things, you're going to mess up. And that's not just for like a painting or this podcast episode, which this is now the third time I'm recording this. It's with making a self. Making a self and trying to influence the world to become what you think it should be. Right? The idea that we get sort of like, I think it's an art term, right? Sfumato. It sort of means like a blurriness or kind of like a fogginess. And by art, I mean like it would sort of be a part of the painting that was sort of, how do I put it? Like shadows, like shadowy. Yeah, that's a word, right? So you have shadows in a painting, using light in different ways for a work of art, for a painting. And it's the same thing in life. Right, so if we perfectly had a clear image of what the right perfect thing to do, what, you know, at all times, I mean, it would not be exciting at all. If we have, let's say, more of if our posture is such that we learn how to let the obscure things in life, the lack of certainty, the imperfections, right? And lack of certainty is ultimately an imperfection, right? We're not perfect in our ability to perceive things, or the world is just absurd and it's not giving us enough information to even discern if we were super awake, right? As Chodron says, right? This idea of awakeness being very important here. We can learn to be excited by that doubt, by that imperfection. And that's what James is saying. That's what Mac Miller is saying, right? It could still feel worth it for a sense of eudaimonia, which makes life meaningful and worthwhile. Right? If things were perfect, it'd be closed. It'd be done. It would leave no room for us to continue living meaningfully, So let's cut that out, right? Let's try to understand that the imperfections might just be grounds for growth instead of things that we have to ruminate on, overthink about, and characterize as only negative. And of course, some of the things Pema Chodron just mentioned, I think, are inherently negative. And she's saying these things are going to happen, right? Which unfortunately, many of them likely will. Well, that's what makes the world imperfect. But we can see these challenges, right, as not only negative. We can see the imperfections as encouragement to pursue something better. So as we said, right, or as we say, thinking, feeling, acting. And also let's add to that reacting. Because I think this is, that idea is very relevant for this fallacy, right? You notice, you see the imperfection in yourself and in the world. You're confronted by it. How we react is very important. So we may have the general acknowledgement from James that the demand is absurd, right? But I think what I really like about this anecdote are, you know, is kind of how he extracts the implications of that. You don't want to have a perfect world. Not only because you can't have it, so why want what you can't have? That's going to torture you, right? That's not a good way to be. But even beyond that, there's no room for life. Life requires, well, life requires growth. It's going to happen. You're getting older, right? But meaningful growth is something we, I think, often have to make for ourselves. So that new question, right? Instead of why is this not the way it should be, how can I make it better? And then take action on that might be a way to find eudaimonia in the face of imperfections. Make it worth it, right? Acknowledge it, it being the imperfection. Don't demand perfection as often maybe as you are already, because not only is it impossible, it's actually not even that healthy for you. It's through the growth that life takes on its meaning. And to say, oh, I'm done, it's perfect, I'm the best I could be at this, kind of detracts from our ability to have a meaningful day. Hope this is helpful. Once again, if you want to read more, we talked about William James, we talked about Pema Chodron, and also maybe take a listen to some Mac Miller and see if some of the lyrics resonate. So hope this is helpful. Thank you for listening. We'll probably do at least one or two more anecdotes for working on being a perfectionist in the future. Have a good one.